It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Welcome back to the second part of our Gen Con 2013 Game Fair coverage. You know, well, thanks for watching the first part. Now you're going to get to see the rest of the interviews.
Yep.
So,
hopefully just as enjoyable.
We're going to mix them up pretty good. So, once again, I'm not telling you the order at which we're playing them in, so you'll have to figure it out. Just kidding. They'll be posted. So, once again, thanks for tuning in and watching this. And through the interviews, we go.
Yep. So, get in game.
And level up.
There we go.
Well, today we're back, finally, the next year at the Gen Con 2013 Game Fair, and we dredged up a classic guest, Maxwell Alexander Drake. You may remember from our Origins 2012 event that we did last June. So, welcome back to the show. It's an honor.
Good to be here.
Good to see you.
Thank you very much. Good to be seen.
Well, we got a lot happened to us since then. So I'm sure there's a lot that's happened to you since then. So, can you tell the audience a little bit about how everything's going with the Genesis Oblivion Saga and what you've done with yourself since the last time we had a chance to meet?
Genesis Oblivion's going good. For my fans that are out there still waiting on the third book, you're still waiting on the third book. It's getting almost done. I really want a 2013 stamp on that puppy, but it may be the very first part of 2014. But there's several novellas that are out for it now that just got released, and it's doing well. I mean, I've won a few more awards with it. Won another international Young Adult Fantasy Award with it, and still running 4.5 out of 5 stars on all the review sites.
Awesome. Yeah, I checked it out. As I told the audience before, and we had follow-up discussions about it, I was saying, you know, you got to get the books. I mean, they're quality, and, you know, I definitely highly recommend for anybody who has the ones that read something fresh and something different, which you put out there for the genre is definitely a contribution. So,
well, thank you.
Definitely. So as far as all that goes, I mean, you were talking earlier about a new position you have. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. That's pretty exciting stuff.
I'm finally able to talk about it. Sony approached me last year to work on a super secret project. I went on board with them in January and teaching classes and doing some stuff on a project that was just announced about 10 days ago. I am the lead creative tie-in writer for EverQuest Next. The first story is actually out. I wrote a novella. It's about a 100-page novella. It can be found at everquestnext.com. If you click on the media link and then the ebook link, you can actually read the whole ebook. It's all free. It is. I'm proud of it. When we met last year, I had actually said, not to you, but I had said to other people, I have no interest in doing tie-in writing. I don't want to play in someone else's sandbox. I want to continue doing my own thing. You know, I like my comic series. I like, you know, I've got a superhero novel series now that I'm working on. I want to kind of stay on my own thing. And then Sony came up and they were like, hey, you said you didn't want to do tie-in work, but, you know, we pay really well. So would that change your mind? And I was like, dude, that you had me at Sony. So,
right.
So, you know, and I've been doing the Sony fanfare for a while, and I've been teaching at the Sony fanfares, and several of the people there are fans of mine. They've read my series, and it just kind of organically evolved over a time period. But when they approached me last year, I think the big hook for me was, you know, one, they wanted to bring in an author, somebody who, you know, writes epic stories and somebody who looks at things in a different way, because they've been, you know, the EverQuest franchise is 14 years old. So you have EverQuest 1, you have EverQuest 2. They were looking for kind of a more epic way to tell stories and a different way to tell stories. And they tell beautiful stories.
Oh, yeah.
But they wanted to tell it in a fresh, in a different way than they've been doing it, because they've been doing it for so long. So that was a really big selling point for me. And then the fact that I'm coming in right at the beginning, right at the ground floor of, you know, because the game won't be out for a while. And there is no release date, but, you know, it definitely won't be out. I can't say a date. I have no idea. It won't be out tomorrow. It's not going to be out for a while. So it was nice to be able to kind of help come in and make the story that is EverQuest. And for those EverQuest players that are out there, this is not EverQuest 3. EverQuest 1 and EverQuest 2 do not exist. This is a reboot of the whole franchise. Basically what we've done is, you know, you have 14 years of history, 14 years of some really great storytelling, some not so great, but some things that maybe they had ideas and they went down different paths and didn't fit or whatever. But the cool thing about EverQuest Next is that the team has basically had the ability to cherry pick all the best stories from the last 14 years, bring them into a brand new world with brand new technology, and massage it into one cohesive, solid, really epic story. So I'm very excited about the story. I'm very excited about working on the project. We're really taking a fresh take on it. If you're a fan of EverQuest and you read my stuff, I have gotten a lot of emails of, like, it's called The Last Stand of the Tyrdal. So the Tyrdal are the dark elves, the evil elves. And I get emails like, you know, I love the story, but your guys were honorable and they were actually saving the race, and where's the evil dark elves? And I'm like, that's not what these are. You know, you can take your perceptions of what you thought EverQuest 1 and EverQuest 2 are, and you can not bring them to this game, because it doesn't exist. What we're doing in the EverQuest Next franchise is just, it's a reboot. It's a retelling of a great story. But we're taking, you know, we're paying homage as much as we can. But we're also taking a different approach to certain things. There are different things that are going to happen down the road. But the technology behind it has never been done in MMO. I mean, this is absolutely breathtakingly groundbreaking. It's been a while since I've really been hooked on an MMO, and I am going to lose a lot of deadlines or miss a lot of deadlines because of this game. Which is a shame.
Yeah, that is a shame. But,
I was going to say, that may become a new tool in the Sony versus Xbox war. I can't even get my stuff from my favorite writer.
Yep.
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, well, we'll virtually edit that. But anyhow, you know, talking about, I think about MMOs, and I'm thinking about, you know, with our interview yesterday with Jack Emmert from Cryptic, talking about Neverwinter.
Right.
You know, I think that, and as he said, it's like, you know, there is room for these MMOs. It's just, you know, everybody's comes to the table with a different perspective. And I think what Sony's doing and putting the time and the effort into rewriting the EverQuest into the EverQuest Next, rebranding, you know, like re-emerging the franchise, refreshing the franchise, very similar to what Nolan did with the Batman series.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, you can't compare
Michael
Keaton and company to where it ended up. You just can't compare.
The big thing that Sony talks about is the reboot of the Star Trek universe that J.J. Abrams did. You know, a total reboot. We're paying homage where we pay homage, but we're here to tell a dynamic story that is familiar, that is a lot of the stuff that you know, a lot of the stuff that you love, but also going to throw a few twists at you that you weren't expecting.
Right, absolutely. So that's great, and I'm glad to hear that that type of production is still taking place at the high levels, because at the end of the day, that's the people who get the jobs done. You know, people who got the backing, people who got the expertise, bringing talented individuals. Like, it's actually, even to say, hey, look, we know about what you've done. We want you on board to try to work on this with us. And that to me, that's like brilliance personified, to be able to grab talent out of the community and develop it.
Right.
Almost like a baseball franchise where they pull out the minor league home run hitters, and they say, this guy's going to be the next Jose Canseco or whoever. So I think that's really, that's to me something refreshing, because I don't hear that very often.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's talented people in our community, in their Wonder Knights 2 community, you know, us included, they'll never talk to, you know, as far as bringing people on board to help.
Right.
I'm really glad to hear.
Yeah, Sony's impressed me. And I've played EverQuest, and I poked at EverQuest 2, and I think I've played pretty much every MMO that's ever been, you know, put out on the market for at least a minute or two. Because I'm always looking, and, you know, if they catch my attention, great. But I don't have a lot of time, so I don't have more time than just to poke at it. And the thing that really impressed me was, you know, they're really coming to the table with a attitude of, what can we do to separate? What can we do to separate this franchise? And we don't want to just recreate another World of Warcraft. We want to do something much more dynamic and much more epic. And the big thing, you know, the main reason why they hired me is, we want to tell epic stories. We want the players to go through and not just collect money and collect tools and collect better weapons and collect better armor. We want them, when they finish this quest, to feel like they've done something, that they've accomplished something. They had an investment in the NPCs, in the world, and the technologies of this game are absolutely off the charts. I mean, it's a totally destructible world. Everything in the world is destructible, and there's four layers of gameplay. You've got the air and three layers of ground. You can get a shovel and start digging. And if you dig into an area that has an old ruin or a tunnel or whatever, you'll fall into it. And if it's a really big cavern, you'll die. You'll fall too far. The entire world is constructible. Every single tool that the art team and the developers have for making the world is given to the players. There's no cheating. There was discussion about, well, I want to make this thing and it doesn't work with the tools and I want to do it. Can I just do it in programming? And they're like, no. If you can't make it with the tools that were given to the players, you can't make it. So everything is constructible or destructible and constructible. There's a great video on the EverQuest Next stuff where there's this Karen character and he's running from an iron golem. And so the iron golem is huge and the Karen's little and he's running through the woods and the iron golem's just ripping trees out and destroying stuff. And the Karen runs into this building to hide. And the iron golem takes a second to look at it and then just punches the back of the building off. And it's just these layers of building that are exposed and the Karen's like, ah. So, I mean, everything is destructible. Everything. There isn't anything that's sacred in the game as far as being constructible. It has progressive AI. Everything in the world, all the NPC stuff, they know what's going on around them. So there is no more, and again, this is what's released out there, so I'm not repeating anything that I'm not supposed to say. This is what is out there. But obviously we're really early in on this, so you know it could change. But the AI is there. The AI works. You know, they've already released this and shown this, and you can watch this on YouTube. But like normally in an MMO, you might have a spawn spot for an orc camp along this deserted road. But you go by, it's always there. You kill them, you don't kill them. But when you come back an hour later, they've respawned. In this world, the orcs know. The orcs know what they like. They know what they don't like. They know they like lonely stretches of road. They know they like beating up single players and taking their gold. They know they don't like guards. So when they're spawned in their, you know, camps and they go out into the world, they look for that. They look for what they want. And so if they find that lonely stretch of road, they'll just set up camp and they'll start gacking people. But if a bunch of people are like, hey, let's go fight them back, the orcs are like, screw this. We're getting our butts kicked. Let's move. Let's go find somewhere else. And they'll just move, and they'll go find what they like. So this has added a dimension for the writers, because with the the persistent AI, it's storytelling is we have to think about storytelling differently too in this game.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
yeah.
Even the merchants, like, you know, there's no more, you won't go into a town and have a dude with a question mark above his head and you talk to him and he's like, the town is under attack by orcs, you must help, but the town is still there and nothing changes. In this one, you'll just go into a town and you'll notice there's no children playing in the streets. The merchants are opening later and closing earlier, or maybe they've moved because the orcs are harassing this village. And if the players don't get involved, if they don't take up the challenge and do something about it, the merchants, they'll just close up shop and move to another town because they know what they like. Right. They know they need to make a living. They know they need to do stuff. So if they can't do it in this village, it'll just be a deserted village, you know?
That's interesting.
Because they're gone.
Idea.
No, it works. This is not an idea. I mean, that's why a couple years ago, Sony announced that they were going to work on the next iteration of EverQuest, and then they shut up. And until 10 days ago or 12 days ago, whenever the big reveal was a week and a half ago at Sony Live, they just didn't say anything. They were just...
Well, I'd imagine not, because they don't want to tip off anybody else to what you're...
And until the big reveal, and so when they brought me on board, I was like...
Oh, yeah.
So, like, my fan base was like, hey, where's that third book? It's supposed to be out. And I'm like, yeah. They're like, well, what are you working on? I'm like, nothing.
Stop.
Shut up. Go
Stop.
Away.
Stop.
I can't tell you. You know.
Yeah, that's yeah.
So
well.
it's been really nice to be able to talk about it, because it's an amazing, amazing process that they've got going on, and I'm very happy to be a part of it.
Well, I imagine so. I think what you've described to me is things that. That's the next step. I mean, it really is the next evolution.
I mean, EverQuest broke ground, and you know, you can say what you want about EverQuest now, you know, 14 years later, but in 1999, it's the first 3D MMO. I mean, it was that groundbreaking technology, and that's basically what Sony has tried to do with this one.
Right,
they
yeah.
want the next groundbreaking piece of stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Speaking of stuff, getting back to the Gen Con... stuff that we're working on here. So what kind of stuff have you been doing? What kind of stuff have you been doing at Gen Con 2013? Like, to have fun, or you, I know you see your exhibitor this year. What do you got going down?
Yeah, I've got the booth. I always have the booth. You know, I'm in Artist Alley. I do that every year. But I teach here every year. I teach at most of the major conventions, my creative writing classes. I teach at Comic-Con San Diego. I teach here at Origins. Most of the fan conventions I'm teaching at. So I'm doing those again here. Actually, I did my last solo class today. Tomorrow I've got a private critique group. Which is kind of cool. I really like working with, because it's only a class of 10. It's 10 people are allowed, and they sell out really quickly. But we really go in depth. It's a 2-hour session. Lucky for me, it's at 8 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, which is fantastic. I really thank the organizer of that one. That was wonderful on a Sunday at 8 o'clock in the morning.
I detect absolutely no sarcasm.
Yeah, no. I'm ecstatic. I couldn't be happier than to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning at Gen Con on a Sunday.
I don't think so.
Doing whatever. But, you know, I'm letting my hair down a little bit. I'm actually, I'm doing stuff. In the last 18 months or so, I've gotten a lot more comfortable with my skin. My career's going really well. So I'm doing a lot more play me time. So I've been getting together and tonight I'm doing True Dungeon. I've never done True Dungeon before.
No, we've heard about this. Yeah. So we just heard. Who are we talking to? Yes,
the DM. The first guy we interviewed.
The fellow of Neverwinter Nights 2, Persistent World Runner from one of the writers. He's actually did that. So I know it sounded familiar, and I was sitting there. I'm like,
I know this is
the first interview you're seeing, audience, but this is actually one of our last on the last day that we're here. It looks like it's the first you because of the magic of editing.
Yes.
But so we are fried, Ben and myself. So any of mental slips that I might have. If they've been absolved.
So you should have played with that, and you should have gone, oh, yeah, I'll be hearing about that later.
Yeah.
Could have.
And then you just go with it.
Yeah.
That's why you need a writer.
I do need a writer.
But no, I'll be doing, there's a group of writers that are going through. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm excited
about
it.
That's awesome, man. I'm really happy for you. I think that, you know, from when we first met, I had no idea who you were. You know, we just met each other.
People still don't know who I am.
But that's the way it goes.
Last year I did 8 solo panels at Comic-Con. People still don't know who I am. It's all good.
It'll come around.
It's coming.
It'll come around.
It's coming.
It'll come. But I will say this, you know, from last year to this year and all the stuff that you got going on, I'm really happy for you at the podcast. And, you know, anytime that you got any kind of updates or anything like that. Oh, you know, something I did read was that you had some kind of comic book that you were working on.
Yep, I got a couple series. Downfall is coming out this year. It's drawn by Magic the Gathering artist Jason Engel. It's a personal project between the two of us, so we're a little behind on it. We did a Kickstarter on it last year, and it was successful, so we've been working on creating it. But he's been really busy. It's actually all written. We just need to get the artwork finished up. But hopefully it'll be done and out by the end of this year. I'm also doing a project with Larry Elmore. I am rebooting. I was a huge, I don't know if you guys know what Snarf Quest was back in the day.
I've heard of it.
That was big, Larry Elmore's. Yeah. It was in the Dragon magazine. It's never been published in full. I've been a friend of Larry's for a while, and I was just talking to him about, hey, it's the 30th year anniversary. You know, we should do something with it. And he's like, well, it's never really been edited, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, you know, let's get together and see what we can do. So I put together a team. We've been digitally remastering it. I've been editing it. Should be ready to go. We should be kickstarting that somewhere in December. That's one of the things that we did here at Gen Con, is me and him went up to the hotel room and kind of recorded the Kickstarter video, even though we're still, you know, 4 or 5 months away from actually doing it, but this is a good opportunity
to
get that done. So that will be kickstarting in November, December, maybe as late as January, but I'm thinking December for that one. But anyway, back to Downfall. Downfall is a post-apocalyptic thing. You can read more about it at downfallthecomic.com. I'm very excited about that. I've had a lot of interest in it from Hollywood. I've got 2 major studios that are looking at it and 1 major network that actually sat down with me on that about a month ago and talked to me for about an hour. So that one's really cool. I've got another comic series that will be out next year that's a Cthulhu Western drawn by the Cthulhu master himself, Cyril Vanderhagen. He does, like, if you've ever seen the box set of the game, the Cthulhu role-playing game, that's his art on the front cover.
Oh, really? Okay.
He did the art for the little miniatures and all of that. So he does a lot of Cthulhu pieces and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So to have him as the artist for that Cthulhu thing is really cool. And I've always wanted to do a Western anyway. And Cthulhu Western is just creepy and cool and kind of freaky. So unfortunately, he was very sick. It was supposed to be out this year, but he did have some health issues. Yeah. And had to work through that, but he's doing much better, and we're actually working on that project again. So I'm kind of excited about that. So really kind of three, the Snarf Quest, the Downfall, and the Dead Ned projects. And then I've got a superhero novel thing that I've been kind of working around. I've got a couple of short stories out for that now that were published actually at the Official Origins anthology.
Oh, okay.
So this year they did Heroes was kind of the theme. And that just got me thinking, and I end up creating, I've got about 8 short stories lined out, 2 of them are written, and then I've got a novel series, although I was talking to Mark DeSantos, who does a lot of art for Dark Horse and stuff like that, and so we're supposed to be sitting down in October, and, you know, because I don't mind writing them as a novel, but, you know, if I had a comic book artist that was there really serious about taking it to that next step,
right,
we may end up doing something on that, but again, we're just in the, hey, I've got this idea, and he's like, hey, I might have some time, so that's really where we're at that point.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
But he's a fantastic artist. I would love to do a project with him. So yeah, a lot of things either out or in the works or in the process of coming out. Still, EverQuest Next is my big. That's my big news. I'm ecstatic on that project.
No, I certainly would be.
I definitely would be too.
Yeah. And here we cry having to juggle Neverwinter Nights 2, Realms of Trinity, and the podcast together. And. So we look pretty bad right now.
No, because I'm late on everything, so don't feel bad.
All right, I just want to make sure, because we know how to burn the candle at 4 ends, let alone 2. So you know what I mean. So it's one of those things.
Yep.
You know, something that we'll continue to do is, you know, we're going to continue to bring awareness to the Neverwinter Nights module community. You know, whether it's Neverwinter Nights 1 or 2. And for the time being, until Neverwinter gets to the point where they can actually create entire world settings in their server under their guide, you know, under their systems.
Right.
At that point, you know, then they'll be able to do stuff like that. And it'd be much more probable that we'll actually get a response to that type of a call, because there'll be more developers that are willing to be able to do that, because it's a lot easier.
Right.
Right now, it's at a professional level. I mean, you got to be a professional game developer to build it. And even though they're marketed as player-friendly tools, there's nothing player-friendly about them, at least for the most part. So whenever the new user-generated content gets to the point where it's actually usable by the general public,
right,
and you get more hands in the pot, the more chance for stuff like this to happen,
right,
will be. There's nothing that I'd rather see your series get turned into at least a multi-step module series.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I said last time, I'd be giddy as a schoolgirl.
Well, maybe there's something we can do. So I'll be talking to you, you know, down the road. I mean, I can't put anything on the plate right now, but down the road what we might do is we might be able to work your content into our persistent world, meaning that it's like, you know, it isn't in technically the same thing, but, hey, by the way, something happened to me and I ended up here.
Or, if somebody at Neverwinter Nights is looking for a tie-in writer with some experience now.
Well, there you go. But we definitely would
have pen will travel.
Hear it? Check. But we'd be more than happy to maybe talk about that coming up down the road if nobody else picks it up. I mean, we're very quick developers. We've banged out whole campaigns in like 3 months with our staff. So, I mean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you guys. I'd love to be able to make a demo out or something. I mean, and we talked about this last time, and I still think the Genesis of Oblivion series, because I didn't write it with any type of game in mind, so I wrote it just as a novel and wanted it, you know, so I don't describe a lot of things, things just are. So, like, the magic system is, it just is. So I don't describe, like, this would be the rules that actually make this work, because it's a natural part of the world. It's actually a type of science for them, so there's no... I've had a couple game developers come up and talk to me about that, and they're like, man, I'm a big fan of your series, but the big thing I don't know is... How would we turn your magic system into rules? And I'm like, I don't know.
It's probably better that it's written that way, because at the end of the day, as far as adaptations to game engines and systems, you're better off to leave that part very loosely defined.
Right.
Because, for instance, I know of several persistent worlds in Neverwinter Nights 2 and 1 that have fashioned their persistent worlds based off of J.R.R. Tolkien work, mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings, The mm-hmm. Hobbit. And they didn't define specifics in there either.
Right.
You know, it was left to the imagination of the game developer. Hey, you can set this up however you want to.
Right.
It just so happens that if you take a few things away from Forgotten Realms, Dungeons and Dragons, you're you're already there.
Right.
You already got the creatures of the Pantheon. You already got, you have all the other stuff already available to you in the tool set or custom content
right.
for modelers and programmers that can get you the rest of the way there.
Right.
So what you did, I think, would be the greatest thing for an adaptation of your work to make it even more accessible by people, especially the fact that this content would be free.
Right.
I mean, the only problem is you don't want to put so much of your novel into the product that people don't read the novel. I mean, in my mind, that's what I would be concerned about. But, you know,
I don't think that actually
copyright. Yeah.
I actually don't think that would be a concern of mine, just because it's a different medium to tell the story. So same thing with like Downfall. One of the things I'm doing for Downfall, even though it's a comic series, there's two things we're doing for Downfall. One we're doing as a motion comic. So we're taking the actual artwork from the comic. I actually set up a recording studio in my house. I've got actors coming over. I live in Vegas, so actors are like, you trip over them. So I've got actors coming over, and we're recording all of the dialogue from the comic, and I've got a couple programmers who are actually animating. And it's a motion comic, so it's not like animation, but it's like, you know, the layers move and slide around and all of that. And it looks cool enough to know that it's animated. But we're throwing that stuff out for free, you know, on YouTube, and it is the whole comic verbatim. But I just don't see that as a big deal. I mean, it's a different medium. Most people that watch that are either have already read the comic and want to get a different, you know, cool, you know, they want to hear whatever.
Right.
Or it's people that will never read the comic, and they're discovering me through that medium, and then they become a fan of that, and they start watching that. And then I'm also writing the exact same story in prose as short stories. And I'm throwing that up on Amazon and Nook and all of that because I've got fans of mine that I've talked to it. You know, I do 20 shows a year, and I talk to the fans, and they're like, yeah, I know you do comic books. I don't read comic books. I read novels or I read stories. I'm like, well, there you go. There is the comic in prose.
Yeah.
And I don't have to. I can look at Jason's artwork and I can go, and it looks like this. And I can just describe it based off of what he's already drawn. And I can just go panel by panel. And that's basically what I've been doing. And so it gives me three different mediums, the motion comics, the comic itself, and then the prose short stories. And obviously I'm doing, each one is going to have something a little bit different. I mean, I am doing a little flair, a little bit of a different twist on the motion comic. And then in the prose, I have more. I mean, in a comic, we're doing 32 pages, so it's 32 pages, period. When that 32-second page is done, that issue's done. I can't go any further. But with short stories, I mean, I'm trying to make them around 6,000 words, but if they're 7,000 or 5,000, or if I need more room, less room, it's much more malleable to kind of tell the tale during that time. Right. So it's just different mediums to me, is all I see it.
Yeah, I think that's... You know, I think the more you talk about the fact that you have one product that can be realized in all these different ways and translate into all these different things, I think that it just goes to show you how well you've crafted your content. Because if you basically were so rigid, say you build, I'm building this for this particular game, or I'm writing this for a computer game, but it doesn't have the content.
Right.
I got some nice looking areas. I got a couple NPCs. I got a loosely defined story. If you go to transpose that to either comic, novel, prose, whatever, you won't be able to do it because there's some gaps.
Right.
You got the full blast, and you're like, okay, you want it this way? There you go. You want a JPEG, PNG? You know, it's a way technically to
and
look
that,
at
that,
it.
That was actually a discussion we had with Sony because, you know, I wanted to make sure that these tie-in pieces, like the Last Stand of the Tear Doll that's out right now, you don't have to know anything about EverQuest to read it. You don't have to know anything about, you don't have to ever play the game. I've got tons of fans that just want to read new stuff from me. So it's a solid standalone story. It is 100% lore canon. I mean, it's accurate to every little thing that you could possibly want in that story. If you're a lore fanatic of EverQuest, you're going to love that piece. But if you don't play video games and never will play a video game, you can read that story and just understand the entire world, be immersed in that story, and walk away very happy with a complete, you know, piece of literature that you enjoyed reading.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I wanted. I wanted to make sure that the stories that we're putting out for the EverQuest Next product are not just lore pieces. They're not just fanfic. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with fanfic, but that's not... I don't write fanfic because, you know, fanfic is what it is, and it's awesome. But I'm a professional writer, so I want to write something that is worth, even though they're giving it away for free, you know, I want it to be something that has value. And that's why, like I said, in the first professional review that the thing got, he was blown away that he expected it to be a lore piece. He expected it to not be well written. He expected it to just be written by the dev team or you know, whoever that are decent writers but are just trying to really their emphasis is just getting that lore out to the fans. And that wasn't my emphasis. My emphasis is making the lore accurate, but my emphasis is telling a tale and a story that's completely standalone and completely solid and just a literary reader can go into and go, this was fun. This was enjoyable to read.
Wow.
And, I mean, that just sounds like, to build on Brian's point earlier, that somebody upstairs in Sony really knows what they're doing, because when you combine a good world with an immersive lore and a system that it can be built for video games, comics, movies, little YouTube shorts, you know, whatever you do, at that point you have a world that, regardless of how you want to look at that world, you still get a good wide view, but you don't have to be an expert in every portion of that just to go forward.
Yeah, during the launch, Jeff, the main producer of EverQuest Next, one of the things he said that really made me happy, because he's up on stage and he's announcing it, and he was talking about the tie-in writing, and he said, my goal, what is going to make me happy is when I am at a convention or if I'm overseas or if I'm walking around and somebody stops me and goes, you know, never played EverQuest, but I read those EverQuest stories and they are fantastic. That's what he wants. He literally wants fans of the stories, regardless of, I mean, obviously he wants them playing the game too, because we all want you playing the game.
Right.
But he is really looking to put out a product that entertains people in the medium that they want to be entertained in. If they want to be entertained, EverQuest is a beautiful story. It's an amazing world of 14 years of just tons of people writing in this one world. There's a ton of lore and a ton of history, and it's a shame, you know, to lose that to it just being a game.
Right.
So that made me proud to do what I'm doing for them, because they see it, they want it, they want more than just lore pieces for those. Because you always have the small fan base, or not small, but the portion of the fan base that are lore hounds and they want all the lore. And then you have those portion of people who play games that are like, I will never read anything. I will click as fast as I can that then I can kill something.
Yeah, we have those.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you'll always have those two extremes on the side, and then everyone in the middle is everyone in the middle. But he really wants, he doesn't want to just please the lore fans with this one. He wants to also put out another medium that people who may never touch the game will then, you know, really enjoy the story.
Right. Well, and I think that's something too, especially as, you know, the culture expands for both EverQuest in general and just, you know, the gamer archetype and that sort of thing, is people want to be able to relate to each other. So even if, you know, say you wrote the lore, Brian's addicted to the game, well, I may just want to read the comic just so I know what's going on enough that the three of us can have a conversation. And I think that's a great thing, because I know, especially when World of Warcraft was new, which I know it's a horrible noise and everybody in the audience is hissing to themselves, but the thing was, though, is, you know, you'd have somebody, oh, I have this DPS 10 plus heavy with 40 shoulders, and you're just going, what are you talking about?
And why has it turned into that, right, where your game is based about gear?
Right.
Not about interaction, story, background.
You don't say, oh, whatever. I've had fun and killed this dragon and, you know, made real-time friends based on the game. And I think that's something that sounds like they're trying to pull back with this game, is back before the graphics were amazing and before gear hunting became standard.
Right.
There was a sense of, you know, hey, we became buddies because, you know,
we adventured together.
Right.
Right.
You know, we did hardships together.
Yeah.
And we can reminisce about that. And yeah, that is, I do feel that is where EverQuest is going. And I'm not, you know, I'm a tie-in writer, so I'm not, you know, I am working with the dev team, but my first day with them is actually Friday, so less than a week from now when I really start. I've been working with the dev team, you know, on different things, but starting on the 23rd, I'll actually be in the Sony offices and locked in. their words were, we are going to lock you in a room with us for the next 2 weeks, and we're not coming out for a while. So, you know, tell your wife you love her. So it's, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a very collaborative organization, and everybody that I've met from Sony has just been fantastic. They're all players. They're all fans. Right. And so it's just amazing to be a part of that group. Right.
Well, here we are at Gen Con 2013, and we're actually having a follow-up video interview with our last interviewee, Alexander from The Fallen Empire and Legends of Arcadia.
Indeed.
So welcome. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Good to meet you guys in person.
Yep. Yeah. So since your interview, how's the player base been, and how's things going? Any feedback?
Well, I'd say our player base, at least on a regular basis, seems to be increasing a bit. And we've been doing some minor updates, mainly bug fixes, things like that. One thing to note is that I know Kadrin, with his PRC pack, introduced a bunch of great stuff. One of them the kind of unbalances a class that uses rapiers. So we're kind of trying to buff up some of the other weapons and have our default rune weapons for those have additional effects to encourage people to use things like, you know, great swords or the exotic weapons or something.
Right. And
also, I've been starting to run DM events involving a group known as the Red Priests, or the Order of St. Savorus, as they're called in the longer sense. They're the more fanatical branch of our world's main church. Basically, unlike the other branches of the church, who are mainly just normal people, these guys become eunuchs for the sake of their faith. They kind of castrate themselves in exchange for these weird rituals they do, gain unusual powers. But they're uber fanatical and like to kind of kill and torture non-believers. They're starting to show up again in the Empire and trying to get things under their control again, so I've had them show up with a couple of events, which will eventually lead up to the new boss run that I'm about to release involving their cathedral and putting an end to their corrupt practices there.
So minor spoiler hint, but yeah.
Yes. That'll involve the RWS cathedral tile set, which is nice, as well as a bunch of stuff I built using the BCK, the building construction kit.
Yep.
All the modders out there will know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Maybe not the players.
Yep. So how do you think things have been changing in the Neverwinter Nights 2 community since, I mean, just over the last couple of weeks? Have you seen that Tales of Am shut down? And
that,
one of the biggest servers, they shut down? And, I mean, it's just like, it just seems like a big mix-up going on in the community these days. I don't know.
Well, without the game spy there officially, I mean, it's going to be harder for some worlds to get new players. Although I've noticed our numbers haven't really substantially changed, and neither have the numbers for certain other worlds. So I'm not sure what the situation with Tales of M was, personally. Didn't know them, but people probably just got to keep on trying to hold on to this game.
Yeah. Have you, like, since you've been here, have you been had a chance to talk to any of the Gen Con goers or any of the D&D pen and paper people about your persistent world or just about Neverwinter Nights 2 in the general, or...
A little bit. I mean, I've mentioned it. I haven't really been actively pushing it here. But, yeah, I've definitely been talking to people about my my setting and all that, particularly how it's tied to the books I've written and I'm still writing. And really, I'd say next year at Gen Con, I'm hoping to get more stuff together and have the chance to really present my things to people in a more professional format.
That's really cool. I mean, I know you're talking about your book. You had it published, correct? Or are you still working on it?
I published on, it's a self-published at this point. I have it on Amazon.com. I have the first edition of what's supposed to be my first book. But basically what I'm trying to do now is, essentially, I was originally going to begin the series as having a kind of two main characters. What I ended up doing is writing the first book as kind of the origin for one of the characters, and a lot of it's kind of dark and gritty and borders on horror at some points, where the main plot of it is the character as a young man is kidnapped by this cult and kind of forced to fight in their battle arenas as part of the rituals to their god and discover some very dark parts of himself. Yet, what I'm going to do is introduce the other character, Lasana, who is a kind of high-ranking member of the nobility, and it's about her discoveries of her innate magical talents as well. And eventually the two characters will end up meeting and some interesting things happening. But that adds kind of a lighter but more spiritual and mystical side to the series, which I'm hoping will change the mood of things a bit. Balance
Very cool.
things out, masculine with the feminine.
Very cool. So what kind of stuff you've been doing here at Gen Con? What kind of games you've been playing?
Gen Con, having some fun. Today's probably our lightest day as far as gaming goes, so I can hang out with you guys for a bit. But I've been doing True Dungeon. Did some True Dungeon. Our first round of it was yesterday. Did horrible in the run. I don't know if you guys have ever played that, but we had ourselves outfitted with all this great gear my friend had picked out, but the monsters kind of got around that. We technically did not win, but we got a few treasure draws. Incidentally, I got apparently one of the rarest tokens of them all, this rare epic charm, which is supposedly worth like $500. So
cool.
Got that. And then we did a Star Wars event yesterday. Old Star Wars D6 system by West End Games. Did that. We're doing a Call of Cthulhu today. And I don't know if you guys have played any of those horror systems.
No, huh?
But yeah, it's a more of a modern-day horror set in the worlds inspired by H.P. Lovecraft. And then we got a Pathfinder game going the other day, another True Dungeon, and maybe a few more little things. But we're going to try the playtest of the 5th edition D&D, or whatever they're calling it nowadays.
I think it's D&D Next.
Yeah.
D&D Next. We attended, they had an event last night. It was a night with D&D. We went over to one of the theaters over here, and they had like Ed Greenwood and a bunch of other guys. And they had like a murder mystery, so it lasts like till 9 o'clock, and then you had to go through that. And they give you a manual and dice and everything. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And they had like the whole place was like set up from one end to the other with the actual like Baldur's Gate.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to meet Ed Greenwood. Never got a chance to do that.
Yeah.
If I'd known about that, I probably would have gone.
Yep, yeah, it was a really cool thing. I just seen him today. I had to go huffing it back to get the tripod, and I was just coming back, and he was crossing the road, him and some other people. He had his Elminster shirt on and stuff like that. It was kind of cool. I mean, you don't think you're going to see something like that every day. You know, not that it's just interesting, you know, to actually be around people who actually help forge the craft that we have picked up and become leaders in now. You know, so it's like been that's. It's a lot. It's hard. You don't see a lot of that these days. And our next guest coming on is Shane Hensley, and he's the CEO of Pinnacle. And the fact that he had worked as executive producer on Neverwinter, and you know, we've worked with him, and he's actually a self-made man as well, making his own pen and paper games.
Nice.
So there's a lot of cool success stories that you know you can actually see how they've came around, how they've been perpetrated, and you know, just from one day to the other. So it's very interesting.
I look forward to following those footsteps myself, and you know, getting the books out there as well as branching off, doing games based on that, and both pen and paper. And ideally, I would love to have a series of like games out there that I make based on my world, you know, from fresh, that are similar to something like Neverwinter Nights, where you could. Both have an official server, and people can then take the toolkit and make their own servers, and potentially the best of those servers could make it out to the official world.
Yeah, we've been talking to a lot of people about it, and we're hoping that one day that we do get a Neverwinter Nights 3, where it's actually up to date, you know, with current technology, not 2007 technology, 2008 technology, and the fact that they give us the means is to be able to make our own MMOs, being that we're so close as it is right now. If we had just a little bit more as far as capacity, like where you can have a couple thousand people on versus a couple hundred, you know, there's a definite barrier, and with rural marketing.
I think it just requires a different kind of game engine, because I know you're not supposed to do this, but back in the day I did try some World of Warcraft servers that were the free servers that people launched, and where they kind of took the game code and then made some of their own stuff and launched the servers, and they were able to have like 1,000 or 2,000 people in those. So, you know,
so it's interesting.
Possible.
It's interesting. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunities, and I think you know, something we would like to have done yesterday, we didn't have an opportunity to do it, but one of the things we'd like to do is we'd like to, you know, start the conversations with the official brass at, you know, to get those type of things moving. Yeah. We've already interviewed Fergus Urquhart from CDO Obsidian, and he certainly wants to do something more. You know, they were working on getting the rights back in Neverwinter Nights, and
Project Eternity's looking good.
Project Eternity. Oh yeah, it's a huge Kickstarter, and you know, and the fact that we talked to him not even that long ago, and he, you know, helped get that fully funded and then some. And the fact of the matter is that when you have those people still in the industry who pioneered Neverwinter Nights, period, one of the most successful RPGs ever, as far in whatever and what it's been able to do, there's nothing's close to it, not even the new stuff. So, you know, at the end of the day, what we'd like to do is we'd like to get those people together, get the all the legal wranglings wrangled out, and then you say, hey, look, you have Neverwinter. It serves a certain crowd. You have the MMO. It's easy to play. There's a lot of scalability. There's, you know, tons of players. You got over 2 million players now.
Customizable.
Customizable somewhat. I mean, it still has a lot to go to even be close to Neverwinter Nights 2 customization capabilities. It's true. I mean, it's not close yet. But it will be maybe one day. But it's still not going to be classic D&D. And it's no matter how you shake it up, classic D&D is more complicated than that. It's got more rules, more classes, more content, more background than hack and slash alone. So you got to get two crowds to satisfy here.
You got to have something to satisfy the D&D crowd where you can have like a dungeon master and a group of players and to be able to create worlds and stories on the fly, which I like MMOs. And I wanted to play Neverwinter myself as well, but I mean, I'm way too busy with my own projects to do that at the moment, even though I enjoy that kind of action MMO sort of idea.
So, no, I mean, it's, I mean, being that we, you know, you and I have been in the community for a while, whether, you know, with Legends of Arcadia, now Fallen Empire, and us with ROT, you know, we've got, between all of us, we have a lot of experience, and we've worked with Witch King from Rise of Sauron, you know, we've worked with a lot of different Persistent Roadrunners over in our course of the last 5 years. So, I mean, we're all kind of in the same boat where we want to see more and we want to be able to get more out of it. You know, that's kind of where we're at right now. And I think that, you know,
if there's anything I can do to help with that, definitely let me know and I will work with you guys on that.
Well, we're certainly talking about it. Yeah. And we're certainly looking at a lot of different avenues and marketing and stuff like that. And the way I had framed it on our media update prior to us coming to Gen Con was that we would like to actually have a consortium of servers to get together because of our combined capacity and the wide breadth of people that we could serve compared to, say, an MMO. Us all together equals the same thing. It's just we have all these different things. Maybe if it's a slight standardization in the way we all approach certain things.
Yes.
That would maybe all it would take for us, not to change our content, our story, or our whatever else, but to say, hey, look, if you come here, these are the features that you can expect to have, and it all works the same. You got the auto downloader, you got this stuff, you know, and it may have one master page that actually takes the Neverwinter Nights 2 brand and actually have all the ways to connect to the Neverwinter Nights 2 Persistent Worlds.
That'd be great.
With all, like, in one standard way.
Right.
Yeah, especially considering that the game spies enough anymore. I mean, plenty of people use Skywing's client, but new players aren't going to know about it.
Nope.
So if they do a search for Neverwinter Nights, they might not necessarily find that right away.
And they may not necessarily find the NWNList.com either.
Oh, no.
And that's what I'm saying. If we were to actually somehow get the Neverwinter Nights to official page, or at least have permission to build something like this. Okay, here's the standard product. Here is all the servers. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Boom. You know, and throw them out there, and then you have one consistent user experience on the web. You have one consistent delivery mechanism, and at the end of the day, not everybody knows we're serious business, and then we have the capability of doing it.
If you could even link that page to the auto downloader or the software downloads, you could just press it for each world, get the stuff.
Right.
Oh yeah.
That'd make life
well, and it's easy. It's something we'll talk off air.
Yeah, I'm
but,
no web guru, but I'm sure someone could figure it out.
We already have all of our ADL files hosted on the web. We have an actual catalog page. If somebody has a problem with a specific resource, whatever, they can click on it automatically down the LCMA.
Yes.
So it's a way that we can do that for the community. I think that would be a way to grow the player base. So we have a lot of things to talk about one day, but
yeah.
So we have a lot of stuff, and you know, plus we're talking to the right people, so
good.
So that's one very good thing. Hey Ben, you got any other further questions before we close out this section?
No, not really. Just trying to think. Aside from, you know, I know our server guru over here has many server aspects he gets into. So, out of curiosity, what would you say your favorite thing of Gen Con's been so far?
Let's see. Probably, even though we failed at it, likely the True Dungeon. You guys have probably tried to do a run-through of that sometime if you haven't. Like, you go in there, it's the darkened rooms and the hallways. They make it up to look like a dungeon, and you get people playing the monsters. You get your whole exhaustive list of potential treasures you can get in the form of these little tokens, and it's kind of an interesting little experience.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to more of the role-playing events, too.
Yeah. Really cool. Yeah. Well,
so, top tip for the uninitiated, try True Dungeons.
That's right.
Yeah, definitely try that, and... Well, if you play Neverwinter Nights 2, check out our world. Yeah. Fallen Empire.
That's right. And don't forget about the Legends of Arcadia either.
Yeah, Legends
you can't,
of Arcadia.
Come on, man. The module's up, man. You got to play it. You got to check it out. It's for class.
Legends of Arcadia is a classic. And if you're into just kind of fun hack and slash action and kind of the more traditional feel to it, go with that. There's still a fun token-based boss drop system. You could purchase your gear like an MMO like that. It's fun.
It's got a lot of fun. We played it years ago. So it was different ownership, but we played it years ago. So it's something that's a lot of fun, and it offers a lot to the community.
Realms of Trinity too.
Man. Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys.
We're back at the Gen Con 2013 Game Fair, and we have yet another classic interview to do here with a game developer. It's a little bit outside of the scope of what we normally do, but they do great work and something that you may find very exciting and very interesting, especially because of the mobility of it. So without further ado, we're joined by Brad Cummings of Shenandoah Studios. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thank you.
We're really glad to have you. Can you give us, just to get started, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you started your company and, like, the reasoning behind it?
Yeah, definitely. My name is Brad Cummings. I just started at Shenandoah, actually, but the company, my boss, Eric Lee Smith, he saw the iPad announcement, and his legend is that he quit his job the very same hour he heard it, and he wanted to start a company. He felt like he was an old SPI guy, Avalon Hill. If you're familiar with those old board game brands, he was a tester there, and then he was a designer, and then he worked there for a long time. And then he went into, an adult career, I guess, if you'll call it, and then decided this was a great way to get back into gaming and to provide, he felt like the iPad was the perfect experience to bring tabletop games to a digital market. And right now we've got one game out already. It's called Battle of the Bulge. We're doing historical-based war games, so Battle of the Bulge is based on the World War II battle and follows the historical patterns, I guess, while offering a fun experience. It does a lot of the wargaming bookkeeping for you. If you're not a wargamer and you're like, they have those charts and they have to figure out how many dice to roll and all that stuff, well, you don't have to do that here with Battle of the Bulge. It just tells you what your probability is and you can just play.
So, out of curiosity, is this something that, I know there'll probably be some of the main offensives and counterattacks that were in it, but is this something that, for example, if you were a great commander, you could win it earlier, or if you're a bad commander, I'll assume you're playing allies, the Germans could win, is it set up in that direction?
Yeah, it is. The Germans can win. They have the ability to. They can actually end the game early if they can manage to exit a certain number of units off of the board, meaning they've actually done what they historically wanted to do, which was break out. Apart from that, you also have... the allies can also win the game early by pushing in, doing a counteroffensive, and taking certain areas that are available. Certain locations.
Sense.
Yeah. So we definitely follow the historical context, the historical setup, but at the same time want to make it a fun game for both sides and have a chance to rewrite history, really, which I am actually glad the Germans didn't break out of the Battle of the Bulge.
Right.
But it is cool to do it in a game. So.
Right. And I think, every single first-person shooter who has played through the 90s can relate to that is, you don't want the German soldiers to win, but, when you're playing the computer game to capture this object or win this game, it's exactly that way. You want to win, but you're glad they didn't win back then.
Right. And I don't mean the German soldiers in particular, they were just doing what they were ordered to do. I mean, you know, the politics that were going on.
Right. Yeah. Well, this game is not, you know, we're not trying to address the politics here.
Exactly. We're just trying to have fun.
We're trying to have fun and having an interesting way of doing so with a very well-made game that it's actually very easy to get into with the hardware. I mean, how many people have iPads? How many people have iPhones?
Right.
Or whatever. I mean, it's an ever-expanding medium, especially because of the availability and the continuous expansion of this with this technology. Everybody's starting to get into smartphones.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, definitely something that really stood out to me. You know, moving on just a little bit, Bob,
sure.
Can you tell us a little bit about your Gettysburg expansion?
Yeah.
With the Kickstarter and everything. So.
Sure. So we just had a successful Kickstarter, which I don't know if I talked to you. We just had a successful Kickstarter for a game called Gettysburg the Tide Turns. The reason we went back to Kickstarter is because it represents a new type of game for us and a new kind of ground-up engine. So what I'd like to show you later, Drive on Moscow, is actually a sequel to Bulge, which uses a similar engine and similar mechanics, whereas Drive on Moscow is going to be a hex-based war game set in the Civil War, obviously, and featuring different types of units, different types of mechanics that better apply to that sort of situation. It's actually designed by... So we always work with known war game designers for our designs, right? And with Gettysburg, it's actually our CEO, who I was talking about earlier, Eric Lee Smith. He designed a game called Across 5 Aprils and other Civil War games back in the 80s and 90s. And so he's taking some of what he learned from there and bringing it into the iPad and also iPhone.
Oh, really cool. Very cool. So, I mean, yeah, just from, you know, talking about it, I mean, so can you actually show a little bit about some of the features to the audience, at least as far as, like, how the game looks and where they can find it at to be able to actually get into the game?
Sure. Battle of the Bulge or... Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Battle of the Bulge is fine. A good start.
Yeah, Gettysburg is still in development, so we don't have anything to show on that right now. But, Battle of the Bulge is available now. I don't know. I guess they're going to be able to see that, but we're going to
edit in actual screenshots. But this is just for conversational
reference.
Piece.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're going to ad lib this one a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, here we have Battle of the Bulge. Yeah, it's available now. You can get it on the App Store. So it's available only for iPad at the moment. However, I have it here, running on my iPhone. It should be out in the next couple months on iPhone. So we're really working hard to get it ready.
That's A+. I mean, I'm looking at this game and I'm like, you know, I'm personally don't play with the war games and stuff like that. And I'm looking at that, I'm like, man, I'd like to check that out. You know, it's something I would definitely get into. You know, you don't have to have some major commitment into it. Like, you know, how many games nowadays? You got to sit down and like, okay, I'm playing this MMO and and I don't got time for that. You know, I mean, I got to sit there and I got to three grunts
in 8 hours a day.
Yeah, I mean, whereas something like this, it's like I'm getting in. I can set my strategy and I can go after it. Now maybe I don't finish in a 20-minute. You know, maybe you can't. It just the point of the matter is that for something as simple to get into and as well designed as this product is, and innovative as what this product is, there's a reason why your Kickstarter was successful, and anything else you work on in the future is going to be successful because you're putting the effort in.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, we really just want to, we feel like, because we love wargaming as well. We love Eurogaming. And it's something I feel like I don't get to do often enough, right? I got to go to work. I got a new daughter who I love and want to spend time with. And a wife, too, that I love and want to spend time with.
No problem.
Yeah, but these games allow you to take things in smaller chunks, right? So you can play online with people asynchronously. So you can take your turn. And then a little while later, they can take their turn, and whenever they let you know, you can keep playing. I'm a fan of MMOs and big things like that, but I love to augment my gaming, I guess, with small doses of strategy.
That's not typically been my genre of gameplay. However, the more that I, you know, find myself spending a lot of time gaming, which I don't do a lot of gaming because I'm a developer. Software engineer, you know, I'm a game developer, so yeah, it's kind of hard for me to get involved.
Right.
But if I did get involved with something, you know, I mean, just looking at it, because I do like that style, and I like the way you put it together. So, whatever you in the audience of actually checking out this product, you'll see that it is high quality. I mean, I don't know, it's hard to explain. You got to see it. Wait till you see the pictures and all links to all of your works. Existing and some of your Kickstarters, we're going to put in our show notes
for the audience to be able to go and check out on our Facebook page so that, you know, do you have a Facebook presence?
Oh, we do, yeah. So if you search Shenandoah Studio, we're on there. Actually, our designer, John Butterfield, just started a Battle of the Bulge iOS game page as well. So if you look that up.
Even better. So, you know, what we can do is we can link to you off of our page as well and vice versa.
Yeah.
And you know, before we go on, I just wanted to ask you, like, what are some of the, like, I know you're talking about the Gettysburg.
Yeah.
Do you have any like longer term plans? Like, what's your future? Do you think it looks like? What kind of games do you want to get? You want to continue down this road, or do you have other ideas?
Sure. So, I think we have kind of a twofold plan. We want to continue to serve this kind of war game strategy audience. We feel like within the strategy games that are available on iPad, this sort of historical based war game audience is a little underserved as compared to others.
Yeah.
You know, we really like Euro games as well. So we're going to continue to produce sequels for Battle of the Bulge, more World War II battles. We actually just did a big survey where we went through a whole list of possible ones that we could do, and we're going to be publishing those results and following what our readers told us they want. And they want, a lot of our readers want D-Day, and a lot of our users don't want D-Day. It's really funny. It's like a 50-50 split.
So, you'll never get them.
It's like the number one favorite and the number one least favorite. It's very funny. But yeah, so, and then in the future, you know, we're big Euro game fans as well, and so we're definitely looking into possibly things in that genre that we could, you know, do, maybe do ports of existing games or do some of our unique things. But, you know, we're definitely, our core kind of in our company, we've got those that really love war games and those that really love Euro games, and we kind of want to do a marriage of those, I think, and a combination of those in the future.
Yeah. Sounds really cool. Yeah. Sounds really cool. Yeah, definitely, it's impressive stuff.
Thank you.
And you got anything you want to add?
Question? Oh, I'm just curious. We're not Stalin.
Oh, no, no.
Plan, but that's a side comment. Do we want to get into gameplay a bit, Brian?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Do you want me to show you Drive on Moscow or on our launch game right now?
I would say just briefly describe how, okay, what's involved in getting started in a game.
Sure. So you can play against AI or against people online. The basic mechanics are you command by area, so the board is divided into these different areas. This is a non-final map on Moscow, but basically you select an area that you want to activate. Oh, actually, first I have to do air interdiction. Sorry, this is a special move. But anyway, so you can select an area, and it'll bring up the possibilities of what will happen in combat. So an R means retreat. A number above means, a red number means that it could destroy the unit, and then your chance of what hits you're going to take. If you like that action, you hit commit, the battle takes place, and you see what the result was.
You see these puffs of smoke on these kids. That's great. That's awesome.
So we're trying to take, you know, like, it kind of looks like a war game, but it also is doing some pretty cool stuff.
That's quality. It's quality. Yeah.
It's those special features that make it work.
Right.
Yeah, thank you. So we, so then what happens is after you do each turn, all you do is command one area, and then the opponent gets to. In this situation, we're actually getting some pre-dawn maneuvers, which is like a little bit of a surprise attack. But what happens is the time that those maneuvers take is variable. So a lot of what people ask us about is, where is there fog of war, right? Because war is never as clean as I do this, you do this, that kind of thing.
Right.
The way we do fog of war here, or confusion of war, is that you... your orders, you don't know how long much of the day it's going to take, so it could take a couple hours, it could take, 60 right. minutes, 30 minutes, no time. And so you don't know if you're going to be able to command all your units that you want in a day or just a few of them. Like, on average, you'll probably command five or so.
Which, to your point, I mean, that leads to a lot of interesting strategies, because if I can tie up your units here, even if I'm going to lose, you don't have those units over there.
Exactly. So. Yeah, exactly. And if you choose to make, you know, this attack, right. you won't necessarily have another attack to do. Yeah, you might run out of time. So
Yep. That's really cool. I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely one of the other things before we close out, I want to ask you, you know, what kind of I always ask everybody this. Okay, it's not just you. I asked the head of Cryptic. I asked the head of Obsidian. I've asked the head of huge game companies the same question.
Right.
Okay, over the course of, like, developing a product such as what you've developed.
Sure.
Like, there's always, like, times, like, where you get to somewhere and you're like, man, that's awesome that we were able to do this. And there's also times where you say, wow, this is really stinky, because if this goes on, you know, I'm going to shoot myself, because I got to do it. Can you give an example of either one?
Sure.
Like a time that something was really great or some time that something was really crappy.
Sure, yeah. I think I can start with the crappy example first, actually.
Even better.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, I'm not
crappy.
Afraid to... Yeah, here we go. Crappy, here it goes. Yeah. So we, in our first Kickstarter for Battle of the Bulge, talked about a game called LL Main, and not crappy is not really the right word, but you know, we were playing the game, and it just wasn't a fun game for two players at the time. You know how earlier I mentioned that we want you to be able to change history. We want both sides to have a chance of winning. Well, there's a reason why the Germans lost the Battle of El Alamein. North Africa, they just weren't in a good position at the time the battle happened. And so rather than, release it, because that was going to be our first sequel, we're now doing Drive on Moscow instead. Rather than release this game that we felt wasn't right, we've put it back into development, made sure that we can get the rules right. We're adding a new campaign mode that gives more control to the German player and the Commonwealth player as well, allowing them to have more time to really build up and have a better chance at the final battle.
So it's not completely stacked before you start.
Right. So you know, we're not afraid to change our game plan based on what needs to happen. So we do have some users that are a little disappointed that El Alamein is not coming in the order that we had laid it out, but we really want to make sure, you know, we as a company understand that disappointment, but, you know, we feel like you're saying, when something bad happens, how do we react? Well, the way we react we try to make it better, which is what we're doing, and it's taking more time in terms of our paper playtesting, and so that actually allowed us to do Drive on Moscow, because that game mechanically was more ready, and so we've got
but
this.
But that's a great thing to hear, because I'm sure there isn't a single gamer out there that hasn't experienced the sheer wrath you get when somebody goes, well, it's not where it should be, but let's go forward.
Right.
And, you know, you're playing the game, and for no odd reason, your guy can run under a mountain, or things don't work right.
Well, I think, and it's something that when we talked to Obsidian a lot that long ago, and you know, I don't know how familiar you are with Neverwinter Nights 2, the game. It came out in 2006.
Yeah, I played it. I was actually out of the country at that time and didn't get a chance to play it. But
well, when it first rolled out, there was problems. Mm. Problems. And the fact that they cheeseballed it out ahead of time, not their own fault. It was their publisher, Atari, who was pressuring them to get the game out when it wasn't quite ready yet. Right. And they had to move up deadlines, and they ended up rolling out a problem package. You know, it was somewhat tested, and so, you know, it was somewhat right. Solid, but there was a lot of issues that had to be rectified over a series of patches and, you know, ongoing type of thing for the next couple of years until their first expansion came out a year later. And one of the things that they had even said, even afterwards, is that what they're doing with Project Eternity is that they want to make sure that the game rolls out at perfect. Or as darn near perfect as possible, even if it takes the extra amount of time, because the first impression with your product is extremely important. The game Neverwinter Nights 2 suffered; it had so much more potential. It's still not nowhere near dead. It's still heavily played, and for any game 6 years old, that's amazing.
Right.
The fact that how much more they could have gotten out of it had they had the foresight. Say, you know, Atari would have had the foresight to say, whoa,
let's hold back.
Let's get this right. Let's get it clean before everybody gets their hands on it and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, but now it's like what you're doing. You have a specific vision. You have a specific need to, you know, do something in a way that fits the vision of your model, your company, the products you develop, and you know what's going to be best at the end of the day. And you're executing on it.
Definitely.
So, I mean, I commend you for that. I think that's a great way of handling software development. Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, did we get to a good one?
I don't think I said
a good
one.
I think we're still crappy. So, how about not crappy?
Okay.
How about give me a crowd crap?
All right. So, is this like a surprise good thing that happened?
Yeah, whatever you sat down, you're like, holy crap.
This is awesome.
Okay. So, one thing that was this is awesome to us is we released Battle of the Bulge last December. So it's been out for, I guess, closing in on 8 months now.
Okay.
And we were surprised that suddenly in January and February, people were running online tournaments for our game. Now, at this time, you know, I was just recently hired as marketing and community manager. Well, at that time, they didn't have a community manager, and suddenly this community was growing with, you know, on their own. And so that was a time when we're like, this is awesome. And, you know, I think all game companies really rely on their community. I think Gen Con is a great example of that.
Exactly.
This is all about community, right? It's all about connecting with each other, with the fans, with everything like that. That was one time when we just thought, this is awesome. Like, we have a community, and hope, you know, my goal over the next few months is to provide great experiences for that community, you know, better tournaments, better, you know, just take over some of the logistics for them.
And honestly, that is, you know, the best thing to hear from any gaming company, because you want them to say, we know you guys have a community, or you know one's forming, and to say, what can we do to grow? What can we do to keep them involved? What can we do to keep them happy? And to your case, you know, when you told us about D-Day, about how it's 50-50,
right.
Yeah, you hit those times where you go, okay, if I flip a quarter, half the guys are going to get annoyed there, half the guys
right.
are going to love me, but that's one of those it is what it is situations.
Right. Right.
But it's still great to hear, you know, when people say, you know, we're not going to give up.
Right.
And we're not going to make you guys fend for yourself. And, I mean, I don't care what the game is, that sign that's, it's rare and it's extremely commendable when it happens, just because it's needed. And, you know, as you said, I mean, we've talked to some major people, and there's times where they're very pro-community. There are times where, well, we know we have one, and we like to listen to them.
Right.
But to your point, I mean, it's really, that's the lifeblood of case in point, Narrowware Nights 2. That's what's kept this game going for as long as it's been going.
Right.
I mean, there hasn't been somebody, you know, I'm...
There is no... as far as the official representation from Obsidian, there is no more.
Right.
It's been disbanded a long time ago, but what we do have is we are leading the community now.
Oh,
cool. You know, and as far as like with the development, you know, getting resources together, community together, people to even showcase their work, you know, stuff like that. So I mean, that's where you building a community is going to be important, and that's going to carry you. And I think that this game proves it.
Yeah.
Neverwinter Nights is 11 years old now.
Yeah.
It's bigger than Neverwinter Nights 2. It's just only 6 years old. I mean, it's insane to think about. There's like literally tens of thousands of players every day, every week online. If you add them all, there's at least like 20, 30,000 players probably over the whole gambit.
Right.
That's a lot of players playing a game that's over a decade old, you know, and still modding and making new stuff. I mean, just think if you have people working on your stuff 10 years. Can you imagine
that? That's crazy. Yeah, that's awesome.
That's nuts for software.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're a small team right now, but we know that our community is carrying us, and we'll continue to do so. And we just want to help them and grow them. So if you want to join our community, come check it out for sure.
And if you want to give, before we close, you can give your website address and Facebook page.
Yeah, we're at shenandoah-studio.com, or for our new game, driveonmoscow.com. And then our Facebook page is, Shenandoah Studio. We're there, and on Twitter
search,
as well.
So. Yes, do a search on that.
Yeah,
and get your Kickstarter fully funded, or are you still accepting fee?
We actually are fully funded. And the game is expected quarter one next year. But
so even better. You're reaping the rewards of others' fruits.
You can still buy it if you didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
To back,
so. So I mean, that's great, and I want to thank you again for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.